Good evening, and welcome to the New River Chapter Military Officers Association of America sponsored debate between the candidates for North Carolina's 5th Congressional District. In a moment, I want to ask you to stand as we render honors to our nation's colors. Before doing so, however, I just want to briefly refer to Title 36 of the U.S. Code regarding the military salute during the national anthem by members of the uniformed services that are not in uniform, as well as veterans. Specifically, Section 301B1, subparagraph B of the Code states that members of the armed forces and veterans who are not present but not in uniform, who are present but not in uniform, may render a military salute in the same manner as individuals in uniform. Please stand as our national anthem will be sung by Rachel Nave, who is a senior at Appalachian State University in music education and theater. She lives in Warrensville, North Carolina, and for those of you who attended, you might remember her as Lady Guinevere in Camelot, which was recently presented here at the Ashe County Civic Center. Rachel.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home
Thank you, and be seated. I just wanted to make one additional announcement that this evening Rachel was escorted, is being escorted by Cadet Captain Tyler Wadsworth. Tyler was the 2010 recipient of MOAA's National Leadership Award, which was given to him by the New River Chapter as his position for leadership in the junior ROTC program here at Ashe County High School. So I wanted to acknowledge Tyler's presence and thank him for his participation tonight. My name is Doug Earhart, and I'm a retired Navy captain, and I'm honored to be president of the New River Chapter of the Military Officers Association of America. Our chapter is among 17 in the North Carolina Council of MOAA chapters, and we're pleased to be hosting this important event for not only for our members, but for all interested persons here in Ashe and Watauga County as we approach the 2010 November elections. Briefly, few administrative comments. MOAA is the nation's largest association of military officers that is an independent, nonprofit, and politically nonpartisan organization. It is a powerful voice speaking for a strong national defense with over 370,000 members from every branch of service. MOAA is the leading voice on compensation and benefit matters for all members of the military community. Regarding our nonpartisan policies, the Council and Chapters Policies and Procedures Guide states that legislative actions by chapters, councils, and national MOAA are of necessity politically nonpartisan. For council goals to be obtained, support is needed from both sides. Candidates for office should neither be endorsed nor opposed publicly. A chapter's legislative efforts supports or opposes issues, not parties or candidates. The views of all candidates on important issues should be solicited without recommendations from chapters, so each member can vote with a greater understanding of the candidates' varying positions. Tonight, we're pleased to welcome the candidates for North Carolina's 5th Congressional District to the Ashe County Civic Center in order to gain a greater understanding of their varying positions. Each of tonight's candidates was kind enough to provide us with a biographical sketch, and I'd like to begin by introducing the incumbent, Virginia Fox. Mrs. Fox is a strong voice for North Carolina values, a champion of conservative ideas, and is well known for fighting to rein in wasteful government spending, reduce the national debt, and jumpstart economic growth. She believes we need to get government out of the way by slashing burdensome taxes and red tape, and knows that low taxes and American innovation will put more North Carolinians back to work. As North Carolina's 5th Congressional District Representative, she's a vocal leader on issues of fiscal responsibility, government accountability, and immigration reform. Ranked the most conservative member of North Carolina's congressional delegation by the nonpartisan National Journal, she's been called one of the best and brightest members of Congress by the American Conservative Union. Upon arriving in Congress, Mrs. Fox demonstrated her ability to problem solve and get the job done by being the first member of her congressional freshman class to introduce and pass a major bill, one which helps uniform personnel that was signed by President Bush on Memorial Day in 2006. In 2008, she pushed through legislation reducing the cost of operating the federal government, and in 2009, her legislation to halt the federal government's massive bank bailout passed the House. Before being elected to Congress, Mrs. Fox served in the North Carolina State Senate, was Deputy Secretary for Management under Governor Jim Martin, and spent 12 years on the Watauga County Board of Education. Furthermore, she's a successful small businesswoman who understands the daily challenges that face small businesses and entrepreneurs in North Carolina. She and her husband, Tom, established and ran a successful nursery and landscaping business in the high country for more than 3 decades. Mrs. Fox spent the majority of her career educating youth from Northwest North Carolina, first as an instructor at Caldwell Community College and as a professor and administrator at Appalachian State University. She also served as the president of Mayland Community College in Spruce Pine. Mrs. Fox grew up in rural Ivory County, near where she and Tom reside today. The first in her family to graduate from high school or college, she received her bachelor's in English and master's in college teaching from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She then received her doctorate in education from the University of North Carolina in Greensboro. Mrs. Fox has been married for over 40 years. The Foxes enjoy gardening, attending church, and spending quality time with their 2 grandchildren. Please join me in welcoming Representative Virginia Fox. Now, it's also my pleasure to introduce the Democratic challenger, Billy Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy was born to Will and Frances Kennedy in 1957 in Richmond, Virginia. He started school in Richmond, and when he was 12 years old, his father was called to Switzerland to serve the church. Kennedy finished high school overseas and returned to the States as a freshman at Southwestern at Memphis, now Rhodes College, and graduated with a double major in international studies and foreign languages. Following college in Tennessee in 1980, he moved to Western Watauga County. Billy became skilled at carpentry, worked as a maintenance man and furniture maker, owned his own construction business. He remodeled and updated an existing 110-year-old farmhouse on his property and later built a new home for his family. He began raising livestock in 2000. He has been an active community leader and volunteer in Beaver Dam and a politically active member of the local Democratic Party, serving as both chair of the Beaver Dam precinct and as a member of the State Democratic Party Executive Committee. In 2007, he became co-host of Watauga Talks, a Friday morning show on local WATA AM, and continued in that role until announcing as a candidate for Congress last February. Billy is married to Becca Sanders, and they have 3 children. Please join me in welcoming Billy Kennedy. Tonight, our 90-minute debate will follow a format similar to that used in political debates all across the country. Prior to coming on stage, a coin toss was used to determine the first respondent to questions that will be posed by our panel, and that individual will be Mr. Kennedy. Now it's my pleasure to introduce our panelists for this evening. Our panel leader is Mr. Ron Fitzwater, editor of the Ash Mountain Times. Ron is joined by Scott Nicholson, senior political writer for the Watauga Democrat, Mr. Lonnie Annis Adamson, who is editor and general manager of the Jefferson Post here in West Jefferson, I want to thank Lonnie for the post great coverage for tonight's event, and I'm certain that's helped to ensure this wonderful turnout by all of you. The format for questioning will be such that after each question is posed, the initial respondent will have 90 seconds to provide an answer. The challenger will then be given 60 seconds for a response, after which time the original respondent has 30 seconds for a rebuttal. Questioning will then alternate back and forth between the candidates for the remainder of the session. And finally, to help ensure there will be no interruptions during the debate, can everyone please take a moment now to turn off all cell phones, pagers, or other electronic devices? Thank you. And finally, if you'd like to take any photographs, please do so, but be mindful of other audience members as you position yourself for a picture. Clearly, I've talked long enough. I'll have a few closing remarks at the end of our session, but Ron, let's allow the debate to begin.
Candidates, since we can we get some volume here. Thank you very much. Candidates, good evening. Thank you so much for your time here this evening. We will be giving you several questions from different categories this evening. We will be opening up with questions about the economy. Your first question this evening will come from Lonnie Adams.
Good evening. How would you have voted in the 111th Congress on H.R. 2454, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, or more widely known as the stimulus bill? And why would you have voted that way?
Well, first, I want to thank you all for coming out. I want to thank you, the press, for being here and making this possible. I want to thank Doug and the Military Officers Association of America for putting this on, and I want to thank all our veteran, all our active servicemen and women that are serving overseas and keeping the United States safe to make sure that we can still have this vibrant democracy we've got. So the economy was in a mess. We'd had 8 years of Bush, and things were in a bad way. 8 million jobs were being lost, and people's lives were being hurt. And I think something needed to be done. I believe the Stimulus Act has kept a lot of jobs from being lost in the 5th District as well as the whole state of North Carolina. And we need to be taking care of our infrastructure as well. You look at the studies now of the cost of our repairing our infrastructure and maintaining it if we don't do something now, and it goes exponentially a lot worse. As a builder, I understand that if you catch a problem early and try to fix it, it costs a lot less than wait until it's much worse. So I believe I would have voted for that, and I think that has helped a lot of people. It's created 3 to 4 million jobs, and those people are staying in their homes. Their children are staying in schools. They're able to feed their families, and they're paying taxes. So I think that's it was a good program.
First of all, I want to say thank you also to the Military Officers Association for having this event tonight. I think it's a great thing for a relatively new chapter to be doing, and I think it's certainly going to put you all on the map. I'm an honorary member of the Catawba chapter, and I think, as you all know, I have a very strong record of support for our military. I didn't ever hear my opponent say till right at the end that he guessed he would have voted for the stimulus, but I voted against it because it was a $1 trillion boondoggle. We've lost 3.4 million jobs since the stimulus was passed. It has done nothing to stimulate the economy except create more government jobs. It is a failed project, just like most of the other spending projects by this administration and by the Democratic Congress.
School teachers, firefighters, these are all part of our commonwealth that make our lives better. We need to make sure and keep them safe, keep them in place and employed so that we can take care of them. And I would have liked to have helped craft that bill. And when I'm in Congress, I hope to be part of the process. And then it's hard to make a decision after you had no input in the bill itself.
All right. Moving on to our second question. Mrs. Fox, can you tell us what the total U.S. 2010 budget is? And also, can you tell us what you would do with that amount, what you would cut to balance the budget? keeping in mind that $780 billion is needed for defense, veterans affairs, and homeland security?
Well, no one can tell you what the 2010 budget is because the Democrats didn't adopt the 2010 budget. It's the first time since 1974 that the Congress has not adopted a budget. It is, again, a failure of leadership, and it is something that Republicans pushed for over and over and over again. It's a real travesty that the Congress adjourned without passing a budget. It's primarily because our friends on the other side of the aisle have so much dissension among them that they could not bring a budget up for a vote. As I said, it's a real travesty that that has happened. I think the first thing that we should do to cut spending is to go back to the 2008 budget and appropriations so that we can cut immediately $1 billion off of our spending. Spending is the thing that is concerning more people than anything else right now. There are other ways that I think that we could cut spending. Every year I've been in Congress, I have voted to cut spending across the board 5%, 4%, 1%, and even 0.25% one time that we could not get passed. There is no entity in this country that could not sustain a 5% cut in spending. The total federal budget is over $3 trillion. Our deficit is the largest deficit that we've had, larger than the deficits of all the presidents combined up until this time. We have a major problem on our hands.
Well, that's interesting that we're talking about deficit when most of the three largest deficits of the last 30 years have been put in place by Republican presidents. So I think it's important that we take care of our nation, we keep our infrastructure safe, and we make sure that our budget money, our dollars, our tax dollars are well spent. To do that, we need to watch the budget carefully, but we also need to realize that these programs that we're talking about are making a big difference in people's lives, and we need to make sure they're there when people need them. Social Security, Medicare, these are not things I would cut myself.
It is not true that that Republican presidents have had the three largest deficit. I just said, and it's CBO will confirm this, that the deficit run up by this president in the first 20 months is larger than the deficits combined from all the presidents from Washington to Reagan. When President Bush, when the Democrats took over Congress in January of 2007, the deficit was $161 billion. It is now $1.42 trillion, an increase of 776%.
Kennedy, could you, you've touched on this briefly, could you elaborate, please? Do you support cuts in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security as part of your approach to balancing the U.S. budget? And if you do not support those changes, what areas of spending would you address?
I would not support cutting in those areas. I do think we need to find more efficiency in those areas. We need to look at our long-term health costs and how we can make that a more affordable. But we need to take care of our seniors and and people that have paid into Social Security deserve all the benefits that they've been promised on that. Also, Veterans Affairs need to be properly funded as well. One way that I would see some savings in the government is being more efficient and looking out to not be getting involved in wars that we shouldn't be in. I believe we need to live up to every commitment we make to our armed forces personnel, and when they put their lives in danger, we need to make sure to live up to our commitments as well. But we need to be careful about where we send those troops and not have them in harm's way unnecessarily. I also think that we need to maintain our infrastructure, and in the long term, that'll cost us less than it does if we don't do anything about it now.
Mrs. Fox.
Again, I think what we need to be doing is going back. We start out by going back to the 2008 spending. that will save us over a 10-year period of time $1 trillion. Under the Bush administration, the federal government itself said that 51% of all the programs in the Department of Education were not performing, meaning they weren't delivering what they had promised to deliver. I think that we should go through and cut those programs that are not performing. And there are lots of those programs in the federal government. That would get us started on the road we need to go on. In addition, I would do across-the-board cuts that any department can absorb. I don't think there's any department in the federal government that can absorb up to 5% cut. And then we move on from there in a very selective way, studying programs and basically getting the federal government out of things that it has no business being involved in.
I don't see education being somewhere we can cut. I know my opponent. The incumbent has voted against a bill to support school lunch programs. I don't think that's the place to cut. I think we need a good teacher in every classroom, and we need to make sure that our children are the best educated children in the world, and that money spent on education is money well spent, and it comes back to us many times over later.
While we could probably spend the entire evening talking about the economy, we do want to move on. And since we have already begun to touch on education, that will be the next direction that our questioning will go in. Mrs. Fox, this question goes to you. How do you see science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM, education, in our state moving forward?
I obviously think and know that education is very important. I came from an extraordinarily poor family. My mother had a sixth grade education, my father a ninth grade education. I give all the credit in the world to my teachers and to my environment growing up in terms of my success. Had I not gotten a good education, I would have had great difficulty having any success in life. However, the role of the federal government is not education. It's the role for the states and the role for the local governments. By saying that we should take the federal government out of funding for education, what we would do is we would lose about 7% of the money that comes from the federal government, but that's taxpayer dollars that skips over the states. There's no reason why the states couldn't have that money, but it gives us 99% of the regulations. I believe very much in technical education. I was president of a community college. I believe very much in the need for us to be scientifically up to date as much as we possibly can. We're graduating way too many lawyers and not nearly enough engineers in this country. And so what I would like to see done is a much greater emphasis on technical and scientific education. But that has to be done at the local level. There has to be very high standards for what we're doing. And we have to have more parental involvement and a backup to the teachers who are working very hard to bring a good education to the students that they serve.
All three of my sisters are public school teachers. I understand education well. I've got three kids, 17, 19, and 29. My two youngest are freshmen and sophomore at Chapel Hill. My son is in math, and my daughter's in journalism. We need all these different parts of education as well. We need to make sure that we have the sciences covered, journalism, investigative journalism is a key to the future of this country and making this democracy function. We also need to make sure that art is a part of our education, too. Studies have shown that art is a great chance to broaden people's perspective, and it's an economic engine. 5% of the people in the in North Carolina are employed in the creative fields. So I think we need to look at the whole education picture and make sure it's properly funded from the federal level down to the state. The school my kids went to is 50% Title I. Those kids needed that federal help to be able to compete in the global environment.
I frankly can't keep up exactly with the time frame that we're dealing with. So do you want me to say something else, or do you want to go on to the next question?
Do you have one minute?
Okay. Again, we can have excellent education. We did have excellent education in this country when I was growing up. We can see no results from all of the federal funding that has gone into education. The studies show it. I mean, you don't have to believe me. You can just pick up any of the studies that will show you we've made no progress for all of the funding that has gone into education from the federal level. And let me say again what's very important. Federal dollars are dollars confiscated from us who are taxpayers. That money could easily be taken by the state if the federal government got out of it. If we removed all the federal bureaucracy for education, we'd have billions more dollars to spend at the state and local levels. And that's what we should be doing.
This might be a chance to elaborate a little bit on that, given that there is a lot of accountability in education. What measures of accountability would you use to select programs for cuts or additional funding?
Well, you need to look at each one and understand how it's functioning. And that's more than a short sentence. It takes a lot of you need professionals to evaluate each program and see if it's achieving the results you want or not, and seeing if those programs are helping people's lives or hurting their lives. I think that's the key to it all. We need to look, are you talking about educational programs in particular?
Yeah.
Or I think we know that early education is key to helping kids get into ahead in the world. We also know that once they're, if they have the proper staff and teachers, they can catch up to the grade level and be on par with everybody else. So I think the key is getting all kids to have an affordable access to a quality education all the way through their lives. And that includes community colleges and universities as well. And we need to make sure we're not fighting K-12 against community colleges, against four-year universities, because all of them have a critical part to play in our educational system.
I am extremely big on accountability. I mention it a lot. I push it a lot. When I was president of the community college, I designed an accountability program at the college that the University of Michigan adopted for its own accountability project. So I know about this. But accountability, the wish for accountability, is what drove No Child Left Behind. I don't find anybody who likes No Child Left Behind. It has been a disaster. Teachers don't like it. Principals don't like it. School board members don't like it. It has not done well because it was designed by people in Washington for a one-size-fits-all situation. The analogy I like to use is this one. The Ark was built by an amateur and the Titanic by professionals. And what we have are people at the professional level building Titanics all the time at the national level.
I understand. Professional politicians don't know how to get the job done. We need working people with real life experience, not career politicians who've been in office for 27 years and who don't understand what working people and families are going through these days.